Is there such a thing as too much Canada? Too much beauty? No. Too much poutine? No. Too much snow? Yes. Too much Justin Bieber? Yes, for sure, yes. Our next guest argues that when it comes to investing, it's possible to have too much Canada. Terry Shaughnessy is the president of Shaughnessy Investment Council. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here,
Too
Bruce.
Much Justin Bieber, you think? Is it possible? That one, you're
never.
Never. So what is your beef with Canada? Canadian stocks, the Canadian market, and I'm magnifying the point. Right. I know it's not necessarily a beef, but why is it a risk?
Well, the risk is that there's two risks. One is that, you know, when you look at stocks, or we'll call them equities, around the world, just in the big markets like the in New York S&P 500, in London the EAFE index, which is the big blue chip index there, the sum of those other big indexes are about 95% of the market value of stocks worldwide. So Canada, first of all, only represents about 4 or 5% of total stocks outstanding. And I would guess that most Canadians have at least half to three quarters of their portfolio in Canadian equities. So first of all, they're considerably overweighted in Canadian stocks. The other thing is that unlike our friends to the south, where you have a big tech business with very exciting companies in there like Apple and Facebook and Amazon, Canada has dominated 35% of our market cap is really in financial services, which have done a fantastic job. About 20-25% is in energy, and the other sort of 15 or 20% is in materials, primarily gold stocks. So it's a very narrow market for Canada and doesn't actually reflect the Canadian economy. The Canadian economy is very service oriented, but those kinds of stocks are not listed on the TSX composite.
And if you remove those tech stocks, you could almost say that there's no way you've got growth in your portfolio, just in terms of distinguishing growth and value. Canadian banks, energy, all that could fit a value moniker, but nothing in terms of growth.
Yeah, there's nothing in terms of growth. In the past, it has been resources that we relied on for growth, and obviously for changes in pricing of energy, and also social convention has radically changed the outlook for the growth of energy.
Why do you think that is? Why are Canadians overweight Canada? Is it a hangover from the old RRSP rules? Can't even remember when those changed, but a while ago there were Canadian requirements on that front. Or is it just going with what we know?
It's the second. Home bias is what this is called. Home bias is really noticeable in the United States. Like if you ask American investors, they have S&P 500. They almost have nothing like overseas.
Right.
So this is not limited to just Canada. The difference is in the United States, at least your S&P 500 is worth half, whereas ours is worth 5%, right? So a home bias in the U.S. is not the end of the world.
And many of those companies in the S&P 500 would have international operations. They wouldn't serve a domestic market.
That's true. And the same is true really in the international indexes as well, where like the number one stock is like Nestle in Switzerland, but it's a food company worldwide. That's the most valuable stock in the market over there.
So take us through a sort of model asset mix that includes Canada, but also includes Europe, EFI, S&P 500. What's your starting point?
The starting point would be because we come from the institutional world, so big pension plans, foundations, you start with what's called a benchmark portfolio. And that would be a portfolio that would be roughly 5% in cash, like treasury bills or certificates of deposits, 35% in the Canadian bond index, and then 20% in Toronto Stock Exchange, 20% composite, 20% in the S&P 500 Canadian dollars, and 20% in the EAFE index, which stands for Europe, Australasia, and the Far East.
What's in EAFE? I don't know if I'm pronouncing the acronym, but I often pronounce it that way. But what kind of names are in there?
Right. Well, the EAFE is basically every big company that is not listed in the United States or headquartered in the United States is in that index. So it is things like, as I just mentioned, Nestle, the food company. It's also GlaxoSmithKline, the drug company. It'll be Toyota. It'll be HSBC, the bank. Shell Oil. These are all the big, big names. And Toyota and Honda and things like that as well.
It doesn't include small caps. How do you think about small caps? Do you care about exposure to small caps?
For us, at our particular shop, small cap is an area that is best handled, especially in Canada, is best handled by an active manager, because a small cap or a small company has got risks involved in it. The biggest one of which is managerial risk. It's really who's running the company, like their ability to outthink their competitors. Also, their talent in terms of being able to attract capital to themselves. These are real art and talent to this, and that needs observation. So unlike large cap stocks, which are becoming more and more efficient, there is still an inefficiency of information among small cap companies.
The approach that you've laid out is very, very simple. How do you sell that? Don't clients want a more complicated story? Don't they want like t-shirt cannons and skywriting and here's how we do this? Because it sounds like you're kind of, it's like the read and write and arithmetic, the who, want, where, why. It sounds very simple.
Right. It is actually that simple. The hardest thing for individuals, if you try to run your own money, you can buy exchange-traded funds that track these four asset classes that I've just mentioned. The hardest thing is to keep your emotions out of it. So if you think you can keep your emotions out of it, you could take the simplest possible route, which is just to buy the four ETFs in the categories I just mentioned, and on your birthday, rebalance back to that 60-40 split.
Isn't this advice the fastest way for you to go out of business?
Well, because
I'm only partly kidding.
Well, it is going to change the industry entirely. We use a combination of asset. Our weightings in these in the asset mix is what allows us to basically outperform the benchmark by about 1% net of our fee. So our ability to manipulate the asset mix is really what
that's your value added.
That's our value added. And so just think about it, it's like a recipe. You should think of asset mix just like if you're making a cake, you have all the same ingredients that any other cook would have, and it's how you combine those ingredients that makes your cake taste better than somebody else's.
How are you thinking about the U.S. stock market these days? Has the Trump presidency changed things for you from an investing standpoint?
Not really. He's quite apart from whatever opinion you may have of Trump, and we theoretically don't have an opinion on this guy. I mean, he's not a credit really to the United States, but in actual fact, he's not a detriment to the financial market. So we don't really think that he'll do anything untoward. And in fact, he could actually surprise everyone by perhaps doing something, being successful at least on one thing, like say bring corporate taxes down or bring regulation down, because he does have the Goldman Sachs team in there. So that gives us some hope. But mostly on the S&P 500, the American stock market, we've been heavily oriented towards that stock market for the last 3 years. And we're just starting to reduce our exposure to U.S. stocks in favor of moving to the international side.
Now, you and I have been talking about ETFs for a decade, mm-hmm. but I think it bears repeating. Tell us about that as a structure and tell us about how a regular retail investor can do what you have proposed.
Well, for the regular retail investor, the real value of an exchange-traded fund is that it will give you the rate of return of the asset class that you choose. So let's just make it easy. If we say that I want to get the rate of return of the TSX composite, you can buy an ETF from iShares, to use an example, XIC, listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And just by holding that, you'll get the rate of return of the, you don't have to do anything else, but the fee on that is extremely low. So you don't have to pay a lot of outside managers. And the same is true if you think of these big levers like TSX Composite, S&P 500, which most people are familiar with, and then the EAFE, EFE index that we keep talking about, the international one.
You've recently announced a partnership with Wealthsimple. It is an example of a robo-advisor, of which there are a number in this country, Invisor, Wealthbar, Nest, there's a bunch of them. How does that work?
Well, our relationship with Wealthsimple is a new one. And prior to this, because we are what's known as a boutique, we're a small shop, can only deal with a few number of clients, even though we can manage lots of money. And so with Wealthsimple, it allows us to make available to the public a portfolio that we use for our First Nations clients. So we have four First Nations, about 125 million. It is in an institutional composite. So it's very similar to that benchmark portfolio of 20-20-20 and 35% bonds that I've just mentioned. It's the ratios are a little bit different. And that has allowed us to have pretty good performance over the last couple of years. But now that's available to really anyone through the Wealthsimple platform. Whereas in the past, in order to be a client of ours, you had to have a minimum of $5 million. And it wasn't so much of
what we were... Who doesn't have $5 million? Yeah, it's an easy threshold.
This is Toronto.
Come on.
Sell a garage in the back, you get $5 million bucks. No, but it wasn't so much that it's complicated. It's just that we couldn't deal with a lot of people. We didn't have a structure that allowed us. But Wealthsimple allows us to reach everyone. And we think this is a good structure for most people. We think this is certainly for an RRSP, this is what you'd want.
Well, and there's been a huge amount of buzz for the robo-advisor category. One of the advantages on ETFs versus doing it yourself with a discount broker is as you accumulate cash, even if your trading fees are relatively low on the ETF, it can be cost prohibitive to reinvest that cash. There's no way to do that really simply. If you're with a big discount broker, you're still paying $9.99.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. So this is a much better setup.
Now, I want to come back to this Canada bias here. Mm-hmm. Aside from our conversation, how do you think this gets addressed? How do we alter the way Canadians think about it?
Well, I think most of it is just on performance. I think already it's amazing how many individuals have already made the step out to the U.S. equity markets over the last couple of years. They became more confident in their abilities. And also the convenience of using an exchange-traded fund allowed them to just buy the S&P 500. This is a particular year where the international index, EAFE, is doing considerably better than anything in North America.
One last question, Terry. You're based in Calgary and have been for some time now. What insight would you provide for our listeners on what's going on for the energy sector there and the prospects for a rebound in energy stocks in particular?
Well, we actually think that energy industry in Canada is probably bottomed out. And in fact, just in August, we bought our first position in the energy index in Canada. It's the first we've been in there for a long time, simply because we don't expect oil to take off. But the Suncor and Canadian Natural Resources that make up the bulk of the energy index have done a very good job of operating profitably, even under these low prices. So we think in the future, they'll continue to do well.
Yeah. Terry, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Bruce.
Appreciate it. Terry Shaughnessy, Shaughnessy Investment Counsel.